sisters when they married princes. Even though she'd wed an admiral herself. It wasn't good enough, though. He wasn't good enough, unless he made her better than her sisters. The girl hated the idea of losing anything, even things she claimed were not hers. She couldn't stand being second best, and she hungered to be the one people paid attention to. She couldn't stand the idea of someone else getting what she felt she deserved. And she believed that what she deserved was nothing less than everything under the sun.
My dad is home late from work again. He's been late every night, and I was supposed to be able to use his car to pick up my prom dress this week. All of my friends got their dresses a month ago, and I'm starting to panic. If I don't have a dress for prom, I will lose my fucking mind. I'm so frustrated. And it's complete bullshit that my dad is late again, and my mom is too busy watching my niece to listen to my justified complaints. Everything revolves around my sister and her baby. People always talk that bullshit about the youngest being the baby of the family. It sounds nice, but I grew up with nothing but hand-me-downs and last-minute birthday parties where no one showed up except my immediate family. I'm the reject of the family. The weird one who's become a ghost in her own home. And I'm not even sure why. The last time my mom said more than two words to me was when I stained the sink upstairs red with cheap hair dye. She was frantic because my timing was perfect, the night before my sister Olivia's baby shower. I may have accidentally spilled a little on the bath mat. And it's possible that I used my parents' embroidered towels to cover my shoulders while I let the fire engine red dye soak into my strands. But I hadn't dared ruin Olivia's shirt from when she was my age, you see. That's another thing I hate to hear. When Olivia was 17, she was the student council president. Or, when Olivia was 17, she had straight A's and a popular boyfriend who she married right after high school. I'm so tired of being compared to my sister. She was the golden child, and there's nothing I can do to even win silver, it feels like. I can't wait to leave for college. Due to my parents' constant pressure, I'm going to Washington Central, where Olivia graduated with honors. They never cared about that college until my sister went there, and I'll never live up to the comparisons to her. But I'm done trying. And it's easier just to say yes to going there and blow this place. As soon as my dad's Jeep pulls into the driveway, I grab my purse, check the mirror one last time, and rush down the stairs, where I nearly run into my mom. Not that she even notices my fishnet tights or red leather top. She just mumbles something while looking at her e-reader. That's all she ever does. The front door opens, and my sister walks into the living room with my dad. Sierra, my baby niece, is asleep in my sister's arms. I'm so tired, Olivia announces to the room as she strolls through it. Quickly, my mom appears, closing the case of her tablet and setting it absent-mindedly on the mantle of the fireplace. Of course, for Olivia, she can take a break from her precious screen.
Stephanie can drive you home, honey, my dad offers on my behalf.
Dad! I have to get my prom dress, and they close in 30 minutes. I toss my bag across my shoulder and reach for his keys.
Olivia and Sierra can ride with you.
My sister interrupts. I won't mind. Just let me use the bathroom for a second. Her soft brown hair moves when she talks. She's wearing khakis and a short-sleeve shirt with bright flowers printed on it. My dad smiles like his eldest daughter is the most thoughtful and considerate girl alive. It's super annoying. Fine, I huff, but this is the last day they'll hold it for me. So if I can't go to prom, it's your fault. I glare at my sister. Olivia nods, and I push past my dad to get outside. I'll be in the car. I start the car and wait for Olivia. 5 minutes pass. 10 minutes pass. I send two texts, and she doesn't respond. I know she reads them from the little indicator on my phone. Yet she's still inside the house. I'm guessing her and my mom are on their fourth goodbye hug. My mom does that when we go to my grandma's house, too, requiring multiple hugs to satisfy her need for affection. 12 minutes go by, and I finally leave the car to return to the house.
Just as I begin to close the car door, my sister walks outside with a languid pace and an oblivious smile on her face. She still has to buckle Sierra into her car seat. "Olivia, we have to go," I say to rush her along. She sighs and mutters a half-hearted apology. It's 8:03 when I park in front of the dark shop. The sign on the door is turned around to closed, and the lights are off. And now I can't get my dress. Today was the last day, and this was after my second extension. I begged for extra time, but I was told repeatedly that this was my last day. This sucks so bad. "I'm sorry, Stephanie," Olivia says as I lay my head on the steering wheel. I turn my head to the side and scowl at her. "This is your fault." "It's not my fault," she says with the nerve to look surprised. "Dad wanted to take me shopping to get some new shoes for Sierra. She outgrows them so fast." "New baby shoes? Are you freaking serious? I missed my prom dress because her baby needed new shoes. The child doesn't even walk." "Why couldn't Dad just take you home directly? You would have been back way sooner," I say, raising my head and my voice. "I wasn't tired then. I don't know." She shrugs her shoulders, like my time means nothing to her, like this isn't a big deal. "This is such bullshit." I shake my head and put my hands over my face. "Don't talk like that in front of the baby," my sister whisper yells. I groan and back out of the parking space. We're both silent the entire way home. Olivia doesn't feel as if she's done anything wrong, and I'm too mad to talk to her right now. I'm so tired of her stealing everything from me. And on top of that, Sierra keeps crying as if she's trying to split my brain in half. I hate my life. When we get to Olivia's house, she thanks me for dropping her off. I don't want to step foot into her new house, so I'm glad she doesn't ask me in. A house that I'm pretty sure my parents helped her and Roger buy. Her husband is quiet. He doesn't say much around my family. Olivia probably tells him not to. I'm sure everyone gets the warning label read to them before they have to have any exposure to me. I don't really want to go inside, but I have to pee, and it's another 15 minutes back to my parents. Walking into Olivia's house, I immediately notice that it smells heavily of cinnamon. Olivia burns those candle oil things in every room. Roger is sitting on the couch with a remote in one hand and a computer on his lap. When he notices us entering the room, he smiles up at his wife and then politely asks me how I've been. I say I'm the same as before, though I can't remember the last time I actually saw him. After a few minutes of awkward small talk, Olivia tells us that she's going to put the baby to bed. She walks upstairs with a stuffed teddy bear in one hand and a bottle in the other. Roger barely glances at me as I walk by, looking at all of their stupid family pictures on the mantle above the fake fireplace. Roger stands up and walks into the kitchen, trying to avoid further conversation with me, no doubt. In the last picture, their perfect little family poses in all matching white and black in a small wooden frame. Heading toward the kitchen, I find hanging on the hallway wall in a big metal frame a picture of Olivia and Roger on their wedding day. She's so perfect in the picture. Perfect hair, perfect makeup, and her dress is beautiful. A soft, silky white dress that touches the floor in a regal way. She looks like a princess, like she was made for that dress. Her dress is the exact opposite of my would-be prom dress. The dress I was supposed to pick up tonight is made from black cotton and tulle. The bodice is tight, lined with lacy tulle along the edges of the star-shaped skirt. It's a dress that, thanks to Olivia, I'll never have. I find myself wishing I had a bucket of black paint to ruin her stupid, perfect dress. I look to the next photo on the wall and stop at a picture of Roger, his arms wrapped around Olivia's pregnant stomach. She ruined my prom dress. I'll ruin her wedding dress. When I walk into the kitchen, Roger is standing in front of the fridge, his face buried inside and hidden by the doors. I tap my hand against the stone counter to get his attention. The moment he turns around, I tug on the hem of my shirt, exposing a nice amount of my cleavage to him. He inhales and then lets out a little cough. I smile. I bet my sister hasn't fucked her husband since she popped out his baby. Sorry. I wrap my hair around my finger as Roger's eyes try not to run down my legs, taking in my fishnet hose. Hi, I say, and keep walking toward him. My heart is racing, and I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, but I'm pissed off at my sister, and I'm fucking tired of her getting everything, and I'm thinking of how everything is always about perfect Olivia, and nothing is ever mine. And so she shouldn't have anything that's hers either, especially not a cute and loyal puppy of a husband. What are you doing, Stephanie? Roger asks me, his face much paler than it was just seconds ago. Nothing. Just talking. I grab the waistline of my skirt and pull it up further to the middle of my stomach, showing my lace panties to him. And when Roger backs away, his back hits the wooden cabinets, slamming one of the doors shut. What's wrong? I ask with a laugh. My stomach is in a knot, and I feel like I'm going to pass out any freaking second. But I feel amazing and powerful at the same time. Adrenaline, it must be. I love it. I want more of it. I step even closer and reach for the zipper on the front of my shirt. Roger covers his face. Stop it, Stephanie. Fuck this. He's actually a loyal puppy like I thought. Knowing this adds to the burn of my jealousy. Come on, Roger. Don't be such a... Stephanie? What the hell are you doing? Olivia's voice fills the kitchen. I look over to the doorway to see her leaning there. She changed into pajamas, flannel ones with blue lining. She's pissed. After a few seconds, she turns to her husband. Roger? I don't know, babe. She just came in here and started trying to take her clothes off. He tosses his hands up in the air in a frantic plea for his wife to see how crazy her slutty sister is. She turns in my direction, glaring a hole through me. Get out, Stephanie. You didn't even ask me if it wasn't true, I tell her, getting pretty pissed off about that fact. I toss my purse over my shoulder and pull my skirt back down to cover my body. I know you, she says matter-of-factly. She knows me? She doesn't know me at all, actually. If she did, she would know better than to be such a selfish cunt. And? I look at Roger, and he inches back like I'm a snake. Like he can judge me. If he wasn't afraid to get caught, I guarantee he would have me bent over their shiny granite counter. Well, did you try to come on to my husband or not? Olivia's mouth is trembling. She's holding back tears. I should deny it, flip the script on both of them and blame him. He's pathetic enough that she would believe me. I can cry on demand, too, and if I wanted to, I could convince her of anything. Oh, please. You're such a spoiled bitch, she yells at me, and Roger crosses the kitchen and wraps his arm around her shoulders. I'm a spoiled bitch? Is she serious? She gets everything she fucking wants, and it's bullshit. I'm sick of being the runner-up to her. She's lucky I didn't do something worse. I could have hurt him or her in a far more serious way. Even some of the thoughts I'm having now are surprising me. And I like it. Get out, Stephanie. Olivia shakes her head as her husband rubs her trembling hands. I do just that. I won't have to put up with any more of this shit soon. I'm going to college soon. And once I'm there, I'm going to run that fucking campus.
Part 2. During. Pardon. He was misguided, moving through life with minimum expectations of himself. He was getting too used to life in that foreign place, even believing that his accent was slightly washing away with each night he spent away from home. He nailed his life down into a robotic loop of the same actions, same reactions, same consequences. The women were blending together, their names becoming an endless loop of Sarahs and Lauras and Jane Does. He wasn't sure how his life could continue this way, day in and day out. And then the first week of the next year, he met her. She was strategically placed at Washington Central, by someone, or something more powerful than him, to taunt him. He, or it, knew who he was, the kind of person he was known for being, and he had an agenda. He was set to steal another innocence, to ruin another girl's life. It won't be so bad this time, he figured. He wouldn't go to the same extremes as before. This was different, more juvenile. This was all just in fun. And it was, until the wind caught her hair and it whipped around her face, until the grey of her eyes haunted his sleep and the pink of her lips drove him mad. He was falling hard for her. At first it was so fast that he wasn't sure if he was actually feeling it or imagining it. But he felt it. He felt it rip through him like the roar of a lion. He began to rely on her for his every breath, every thought. One night, in the middle of it all, the snow falling, blanketing the concrete, he sat alone in the parking lot. His hands were gripping the steering wheel of his old Ford Capri, and he could barely see straight, let alone think straight. How could he have done this? How did it go so far, so fast? He wasn't sure, but he knew. He felt it deep down inside of himself, that he shouldn't have done it, and he knew that he would regret it. He was regretting it already. She was supposed to be an easy target, a beautiful girl with an innocent smile and odd-colored eyes that weren't supposed to hold depth or meaning behind them. He wasn't supposed to fall in love with her, and she wasn't supposed to make him want to be a better person. He thought that he was fine before. He was getting by just fine before. Before he made the beautiful mistake of allowing her to become his entire world. He loved her, though. He loved her so much that he was terrified of losing her. For losing her meant losing himself. And he knew he wouldn't be able to bear such a loss after going his entire life without something to lose. As his fingers gripped harder, and his knuckles turned white against the black steering wheel, his thoughts became more jumbled. He became more irrational and desperate. And he realized in that moment, with the silence of the empty lot drowning his fears, that he would do anything, absolutely anything, to keep her forever. He had her, lost her, and had her again over the months that followed. He just couldn't quite get it. He loved her. His love for her burned brighter than any star, and he would highlight passages from 10,000 of her favorite novels to show her that. She gave him everything, and he watched her fall in love with him, hoping he would stop letting her down. Her faith in him made him want to be good for her. He wanted to prove her right and everyone else wrong. She made him feel a type of hope that he had never felt before. He didn't even know it existed. Her presence made him feel at ease. The fire in his heart was cooled and he was becoming addicted to her. He craved her until he had her, and once he took her, neither of them could stop. Her body became his safety, her mind his home. The more he loved her, the more he was hurting her. He couldn't stay away, and through their struggles and growth, she became the normalcy he'd craved his entire life. His relationship with his dad continued to grow slowly into something close to familiar. A few family dinners, and he had begun to chip away at the hatred he felt toward the man. He was seeing himself differently, and that helped him see the wrongs of his father in a different light. And that's when he needed her to anchor him, as his life changed again and his family shifted. He was growing to care for a house full of strangers in a way that he swore he never would. It wasn't easy for him to fight against 20 years of destructive patterns and base animal reactions. He had to fight each day against the liquor calling to his blood, against the anger he was trying to let go of, but didn't know how to. He vowed that he would fight for her, and he did. He lost a few battles, but never lost sight of winning the war. She taught him laughter and taught him love. And he has expressed this time after time to her, but he will never stop. Chapter 1. The last few days of summer break are always the best. Everyone is fucking frantic, living out their last-minute summer plans and wishes. The parties get more crowded. The girls get more wild. But even so, I can't fucking wait for the semester to start. Not because I'm some idiotic freshman, excited for the wondrous world of university. No, I'm anxious because if I play my cards right, I'll be graduating in the spring, a full year ahead of time. Not bad for a delinquent no one assumed would even attend university, much less graduate early. My mum was so terrified for my future that she sent me halfway across the damn world to the grand state of Washington to live near my father. She used the bullshit excuse that she wanted me to reconnect with him. But I wasn't fooled. I knew she simply couldn't and didn't want to put up with my shit anymore. So off to America, like some colonial Puritan of old.
"Are you almost done?"
Pink hair and swollen lips look up at me from between my legs. I'd nearly forgotten she was here.
"Yeah."
I wrap my hands around her shoulders and close my eyes, letting the physical pleasure she's giving me take over. A distraction, that's what she is. They all are. The pressure in my spine builds, and I don't bother to pretend that I enjoy her company for more than sexual pleasure as I release into her warm mouth. Seconds later, she's wiping at her lips with the back of her hand and getting to her feet.
"You know?"
Molly reaches for her purse and pulls out a tube of dark lipstick.
"You could at least pretend to be interested, asshole."
Her lips pucker, and she wipes a finger across the excess crayon painted onto her mouth. "I am." I clear my throat. "Pretending, that is." She rolls her eyes and raises her middle finger to me. I'm interested. Sexually, at least. She's a good enough fuck. And she's okay company sometimes. We are a lot alike, her and I. Both rejects of our families. I don't know too much about her past, but I know enough to know that some bad shit has happened to her to make her run all the way to Washington from some rich bitch town in Pennsylvania.
"Dick,"
she mutters, pushing the cap back on her makeup. She looks better with naturally pink lips, lips that are swollen from having my cock in her mouth. "Molly is an acquaintance of mine. Well, a friend with benefits, I would say. Our friendship isn't exclusive. Not in the least. And we both have full freedom to do whatever, or whoever, the fuck we want. She hates me half the time, but I'm okay with that. It's mutual. The rest of our friends give us shit about it, but it works. I'm bored and she's here. She gives good head and she doesn't stay around long after. Perfect situation for me. Her too, it seems."
"You'll be here tonight, for the party?"
she asks. I stand too, pulling my boxers and jeans up my legs.
"I live here, don't I?"
I raise a brow at her. "I hate it here, and daily I find myself wondering just how the fuck I ended up in a fraternity in the first place. My shitbag sperm donor, that's how. Ken Scott is a grade-A fuck-up, the worst type. Alcoholic fuckhead who destroyed my entire childhood, only to magically turn his life around and move in with some lady and her son, a loser only 2 years younger than me. His do-over, I suppose. Ken Scott gets a fucking do-over, and I get to be in a stupid-ass fraternity at the college he's basically in charge of. On top of this, he practically begged me to move in with him, as if he thought I would actually live under his roof, under his control. When I refused, I had assumed he would get me an apartment, but of course he didn't. So here I am, in this stupid house instead. It really pissed him off that I chose this shithole rather than his clean, pristine palace. The stupid-ass fraternity does have its perks, I guess. A massive house with parties almost every night. A constant stream of endless pussy. And the best part of all, no one fucks with me. None of the pissant frat boys seem to mind the fact that I don't do shit to actually represent the house. I don't wear their stupid sweatshirts or plaster their stupid bumper stickers on my car. I don't participate in any of the volunteer shit, and I sure as hell don't go around yelling the name of the shit. They do some okay shit for the community, but they don't actually give a fuck about the community, and none of that matters. When I glance around the room, I realize I'm alone. Molly must have left without me even noticing. I get up and open the window to air the place out before it gets used again tonight. All of these empty rooms in the house work in my favor, since I can't stand to have people in my own. It's too personal or something. I don't know, but I don't like it. And everyone has learned one way or another not to come in here. Molly and whichever other girls come around know we're bound for these empty rooms and not mine. As I approach my door, I see Logan stumbling down the hall, a short, curly-haired girl under his arm. She isn't quiet about what she wants to do to him, and I'm not quiet about my disgust. "Get a damn room!" I shout to them. She giggles and he flips me off, and I close and deadbolt the door. That's the pattern around here. Everyone sort of ignores me, or simply tells me in one way or another to fuck off. I'm okay with that. I'd much rather sit here, in my room, alone, waiting for the next artificial high. My fingers trace over the dusty shelves of my bookcase. I can't decide which novel I feel like living right now. Hemingway, maybe? He can give me a good dose of cynical. The Middle Bronte Sister. I could use a dysfunctional bullshit love story right now. I grab Wuthering Heights and kick my boots off before lying down in my bed. I don't know what it is about this novel that brings me to read and reread it so many damn times, but I always find myself skimming the pages of the dark tale. It's fucked up, really. Two people coming together, then falling apart, destroying themselves and everyone around them because they were too selfish and stubborn to get their shit together. But to me, that's the best type of fucking story. I want to feel something while I'm reading, and sappy, roses and sunshine novels make me want to vomit on their pages and burn away the evidence afterward.
"Fuck yes!"
I hear a female voice screech through the paper-thin walls.
"Shut the fuck up!"
I pound my fist against the old wood, grabbing my pillow and pushing it against my ears. One more fucking year. One more year of bullshit courses and easy exams. One more year of boring parties full of people who care way too much what everyone thinks about them. One more goddamn year of keeping to myself, and I can get my ass back to London, where I belong. Chapter 2. To this day, he can still remember the way Vanilla filled the small dorm room the first time he was alone with her. Her hair was soaked. She had a towel wrapped around her curvy body, and it was the first time he paid attention to the way her chest flushed when she was mad. He would see her mad again, so damn mad, more times than he could count, but he would never, ever forget the way she tried to be polite to him at first. He took her politeness as pride. Another stubborn girl who pretends to be a woman, he thought. The strange girl kept on being as patient as she could, for no reason at all. She didn't know him anything. She still doesn't, and he can only hope to see her mad at him again and again for the rest of his life. He grasps for the memories of those days now, as he sits alone, trapped by his own mistakes. These memories of his anger, of her anger, are a few of the only things that kept him afloat after she left him. The first day of the full semester is always the absolute best for people watching. So many fucking idiots running around like chickens with their heads cut off. So many girls dressed in their favorite outfits in a desperate attempt to gain attention from men. It's the same cycle every year at every college across the globe. Washington Central University just happens to be where I'm condemned to attend. I like it enough. It's easy, and my professors cut me a lot of slack. Despite my lack of giving an actual fuck, I'm pretty decent academically. If I applied myself more. I could be even better, but I don't have the time or the energy to waste obsessing over grades or plans or anything that could be obsessed over. I'm not as stupid as the professors always assume I'll be. I can miss an entire week of class and still ace an exam. I've learned that as long as I can do that, they'll leave me be. The front of the student union is the prime location for the show. Sitting here watching all the parents in tears has to be my favourite part. It's amusing to me because my mum couldn't seem to get rid of me quick enough, and some of the parents here act like their damn arms are getting cut off when their children, adult children, might I remind you, are off to college. They should be happy, not sobbing like annoying children that their kids are actually doing something with their lives. If they took a walk around my old neighbourhood, they would kiss the ground of Washington Central University for giving their child a chance in the world. A woman with huge fake tits and bleached hair hugs her puny, plaid shirt-wearing son, and I'm full-on grinning as he starts to cry into his mum's shoulder. Fucking pussy. His dad is standing back, away from the pathetic sight, checking his expensive watch, waiting for his son and wife to stop their blubbering. I can't imagine how that would feel, having my parents obsess over me. My mum cared enough when she wasn't working from sunup to sundown, leaving me to fend for myself as she made up for my shitbag father's lack of common sense. She tried to make up for it the best she could, but one can only do so much when so much has already been lost. And I fought her help every step of the way. I wouldn't accept it then, and still won't accept it now. Not from her, not from anyone.
Hey, man.
Nate sits down across from me at the picnic table and pulls a cigarette from his pocket.
What's the plan for the night?
He asks as his fingers flick over the lighter. I shrug and pull my phone from my pocket to check the time.
I don't know. We're meeting Steph in her room.
As he smokes, Nate annoys me into agreeing to walk to Steph's dorm from the student union. It's not a far walk, 15 minutes or so, but I'd much rather drive than push through the masses of eager pupils decked out in their college best. By the time we reach the dorms, Nate is going on about the party this weekend. It's always the same every single weekend. What's there to be excited about? Everything is always the same for me. Same group of friends, same amount of sex, same parties, same old shit, different day. I'm about to barge into the room when Nate reminds me.
We should knock. Remember how pissed she was last time?
I laugh to myself. Yeah, I do remember that day. It was last semester, and I walked into Steph's dorm room without knocking. I found her on her knees in front of some asshole. I call him an asshole because, well, because he was wearing flip-flops. A man-child in flip-flops is automatically an asshole in my book. He was embarrassed, and Steph was pissed. As he snuck out, she threw just about every item she owned in the direction of my head. It made my entire week to see her so horrified. To this day, I give her shit about it. I finally stop laughing at the memory when I hear her yell for us to come inside. And when I do, I'm greeted by the sight of a blonde guy in a cardigan, standing in the middle of Steph's room. Steph is standing between Nate and me, looking at the newcomers with amusement dancing in her eyes. It takes me a moment to notice a tense-looking woman and younger girl with them. The woman is hot. My eyes take her body in. Tall frame, long blonde hair, decent tits.
Hey, you Steph's roomie?
Nate says, and I finally get a good look at the girl. She's decent enough. Pouty lips, long blonde hair. That's about all I can tell, because the chick is wearing clothes that are 3 times her size. I notice the way her skirt literally touches the floor, and cringe inwardly. Just from a glance, I can tell college is not going to be fun for this girl. Case in point. She's staring down at her feet, nervous as hell. What's wrong with her?
Yes, my name is Tessa,
she mumbles. Her voice is quiet, obnoxiously so. I look over at Steph, who smiles a slick smile and sits down on her bed, never taking her eyes off the girl. Nate responds with a smile, always the friendlier of the two of us.
I'm Nate. Don't look so nervous.
I don't see the point in small talk, especially with this little mouse. She's staring at Nate wide-eyed, and he reaches out to touch her shoulder.
You'll love it here, he adds.
He's full of shit. Steph's roommate looks terrified as her eyes rake over the band posters hanging on the wall. This girl couldn't have been a worse match for her. She's quiet, timid, scared of the world, apparently. She's lucky I'm feeling nice today. Otherwise, I would have made her even more uncomfortable.
I'm ready, guys,
Steph says, popping up from the bed. She pushes her purse thing up onto her shoulder and walks toward the door. The blonde boy, likely her roommate's brother, is staring at me, and I glare in his direction.
See you around, Tessa.
Nate waves goodbye to the girl, and I notice her staring at me. Her eyes move from my eyebrow ring to the loop in my lip, and back and forth between both of my arms. Then I notice the woman and that dude are doing the same thing.
What? You all have never seen tattoos before?
I want to ask, but I get the feeling her mum isn't as nice as the rack she sports, so I may as well behave. For now. The moment we step into the hallway, we hear the woman shriek,
You're getting a new dorm!
Steph bursts into laughter, and Nate and I join in as we walk down the hall. Chapter 3. The next morning, I don't feel like going to my first class, so I head to Steph's room instead. She's probably still asleep, but I'm bored and her dorm is closer to my next class than anyone else's in the crew. I text her and tell her I'm on my way, but I don't wait for her reply. The hallway of the old building is nearly empty, only a few frantic stragglers rushing by with their arms full of books. I knock, so as not to give Miss Prim a heart attack, and, hearing no reply, let myself in with the key Steph has given me. To keep myself from falling asleep on Steph's shitty mattress, I flip through the basic cable channels. Just as some stuffy doctor is giving marriage advice to two idiots, the door opens, and Steph's roommate rushes in. She's wrapped in a wet towel, and her long, soaked hair is stuck to her face in an almost comical way. As her eyes widen with surprise, I turn the TV off and stare at the specimen before me.
Where is Steph?
She practically squeaks. She stares down at the floor, back to me, to the floor again. I smile at her embarrassment and stay silent.
Did you hear me? I asked you where Steph is.
Her voice is softer now, more polite. My smile grows. I don't know. She's squirming, and I suspect that with how hard she's gripping the edges of her towel, she'll shred the material. I turn the TV back on and sit up.
Okay, well, could you, like, leave or something, so I can get dressed?
Well, I'm not going to leave. Not when I just found the only comfortable position on this bed. I roll over and cover my face with my hands to humor her.
Don't flatter yourself. It's not like I'm going to look at you.
She's awfully full of herself to think that I would sit and stare at her. Well, okay, I probably would, especially given that the towel she's wearing is hugging her body in a damn nice way. I hear her shuffling around, the sound of a bra fastening, and her breathing heavily. She's nervous still, and I would love to see her face as she tries to put her clothes on as fast as she can. I would uncover my eyes just to annoy her, but I'm in a decent mood. Plus, I'm only going to see this girl a few times, so may as well keep it somewhat civil.
Are you done yet?
I roll my eyes under my hands.
Could you be any more disrespectful? I did nothing to you. What is your problem?
She yells.
The fuck?
I hadn't expected such a smart-ass mouth on such an innocent-looking girl. She's trying hard to be patient with me, and I'm trying hard to make her explode. I can't help but laugh. As I stare at Steph's pissed-off roommate, it feels odd laughing this way, this hard, but her expression is just fucking priceless. She's so pissed. The door shoots open, and Steph enters, dressed in last night's clothes.
Sorry I'm late. I have a hell of a hangover,
she whines. I roll my eyes again. Of course she has a hangover. When doesn't she?
Sorry, Tess. I forgot to tell you Harden would be coming by.
She shrugs her shoulders, like she gives a fuck.
Your boyfriend is rude,
the blonde girl snaps. That does it for me, and I laugh again. Steph looks at me, brow raised at how much I'm laughing.
Harden Scott is not my boyfriend,
she exclaims, maybe a little too emphatically, and starts choking on laughter along with me. We fucked around before, but never dated. I don't date.
What did you say to her?
Steph turns to me and puts her hands on her hips in a failed attempt to scold me. Then she turns to the girl.
Harden has a unique way of conversing.
Conversing? I'm not attempting to talk to either of them. I shrug my shoulders and go back to finding some mindless shit to watch.
There's a party tonight. You should come with us, Tessa,
I hear Steph say. Yeah, right, like this chick is going to go to a party. I pull my lip ring between my teeth to stop from laughing again. I stare straight ahead at the TV.
Parties aren't really my thing. Plus, I have to go get some things for my desk and walls. Come on. It's just one party. You're in college now. Just one party won't hurt.
Steph practically pleads, trying to convince her.
Wait, how are you getting to the store? I thought you didn't have a car. I was going to take the bus. And besides, I can't go to a party. I don't even know anyone,
she responds. I laugh again.
I was going to read and Skype with Noah.
Because going to a store is so much fun. I bet she shops at fucking Target. She seems like the type. And her Skype date. I bet she's going to show an ankle to her poor excuse of a boyfriend.
You don't want to take the bus on a Saturday. They're way too packed. Harden can drop you on the way to his place. Right, Harden?
Steph glances at me. I won't be dropping anyone off anywhere.
And you'll know me at the party,
Steph continues.
Just come, please. I don't know. And no, I don't want Harden to drive me to the store,
the obnoxious girl whines. I shift over and smile at the two of them. It's all I can do, since they're both annoying the shit out of me.
Oh, no. I was really looking forward to hanging out with you,
I say. Come on, Steph. You know this girl isn't going to show at the party. I take a moment to look at the way her white t-shirt is tight across her chest and hips. She should dress this way instead of that long-ass skirt she was wearing the other day. Her khaki shorts are still too long, but you can't win them all.
Actually, yeah, I'll come,
the girl says. Tessa was her name, I think. Yeah, it was. I hear shrieking and squealing, and it's my cue to leave when the girls start hugging and shit.
Yay! We'll have so much fun,
Steph promises the girl as I leave the room. I drive farther onto campus and sit through the rest of my classes for the day. Afterward, I get a text from Nate to meet him and Tristan at Blind Bob's and head that way. I turn the music up in my car and roll the window down. When I was a teen, I used to think people were fucking show-offs when they blasted music from their car windows, but now I get it. Sometimes I just want to drown out the world around me. Music and reading are the only things that do that for me. Everyone has their thing, and these are mine. When I need silence, the noise helps. Better than a fifth of Jack, I suppose. My mum, crying on the phone in the middle of the night, would say so.
What took so long?
Tristan takes a bite from a hamburger. Half the toppings fall onto the plate in front of him.
Traffic was a bitch.
I slide into the booth next to Nate. Our usual server nods at me, and moments later she appears at the table with a glass of water.
Still sober, yeah?
Nate questions. His eyes carefully avoid my glass as he takes a drink of his beer. Yep, still sober. I finish half the glass of water, trying not to think about the way an ice-cold beer would taste on my tongue.
Good for you, man.
I know everyone gives you shit about it, but I think it's pretty fucking awesome, the self-control you have.
At Nate's praise, I shift awkwardly. Tristan laughs, wiping a napkin across his chin.
Self-control! I heard Molly screaming your name just last night.
Well, sober with drinking? No, of course not chicks. Nate laughs along, pushing his shoulder into mine, and I'm thankful for the change in tone. It was getting too personal for my liking. Nate ends up convincing me to let him drive my car. He only had one beer, and I don't feel like driving really. So I agree to let him if he drives me to pick up Steph and her roommate.
She's been blowing up my phone. Says you won't answer her,
Nate says as we pull out of the parking lot. I roll my eyes.
I told her an hour ago that I would give them a ride.
Steph can be really fucking annoying.
I just told her we're on our way. I'm glad that Tessa girl is coming with her, he says,
and rolls down the driver's side window.
Why?
Because she seems nice and should definitely get out more.
Steph says she thinks her boyfriend is her only friend or something.
Boyfriend? You mean Mother Teresa has a boyfriend? I scoff. Wait, the blonde guy in the dorm? They look like siblings, not boyfriend and girlfriend. Is that who she's Skyping with? Definitely a fully clothed video, then. With an added blazer, probably, for protection.
Yeah, he was there with her, that preppy dude.
Go figure. I laugh and turn up the music. Tess and her stuck-up Gap model boyfriend would hate this music. I turn it up even louder. When we pull into the parking lot of Steph's dorm, my phone buzzes. It's Molly's name, so I hit ignore.
Ladies!
Nate greets the girls as they walk up to the car. Steph is dressed in a fishnet dress, and her tag-along is wearing what looks like a maroon sack. I don't get it. I saw the outline of her body in that towel. Why does she wear this hideous shit?
You do know that we're going to a party, not a church, right, Teresa?
I say as she climbs into the car.
Please don't call me Teresa. I prefer Tessa,
she says succinctly, snobbily. I knew her name would be Teresa. I've read enough novels to put that together. I seem to have struck a chord with this one.
Sure thing, Teresa,
I taunt her. As we drive, I glance in the mirror a few times to look at her. She doesn't appear annoyed when she doesn't know my eyes are on her. The house is close. We only have to sit through a few minutes of awkward silence until we arrive. Nate parks in front of the house behind a line of cars. She huffs and rolls her eyes.
It's so big. How many people will be here?
Teresa asks. Doesn't the full lawn give that away?
A full house. Hurry up,
I tell her, shutting the car door. She just sits there, in shock, I think, and I walk up the yard. Chapter 4. He knew from early on, from their first encounter to the first time she used that smart mouth against him, that he felt something different when it came to her. He wasn't sure. No. He had no fucking idea that the fire inside of her would weaken, then be extinguished by his habit of making mistake after mistake. But often he finds himself sitting alone, reliving the days when she was on fire, when her voice and her actions were filled with so much passion that the air between them would fill with smoke. He should have known that that much passion would lead to destruction, to the burning of her soul, and make every ounce of her spirit disintegrate. Taking the girl he loved, the girl that he couldn't and still can't breathe without, and he would have to watch her drift away with the last few clouds of grey smoke. I walk through the crowded party, pushing my way through a group of wasted assholes, playing some sort of drinking game to occupy their time while trying desperately to fit in. Their bloodshot eyes and stupid grins make me nauseous as I pass them. One by one, they give me the same, he's an asshole, look, while tossing plastic balls into beer-filled cups and cheering as if they've won some sort of medal for being completely brainwashed into drinking the cheapest beer from shared cups. When I get to the crowded hallway, I spot Steph and her tag-along. The blonde girl looks clueless, completely out of place in the swarm of moving bodies. A drink is pushed into her hand, and she smiles politely, despite the fact that she doesn't want it. I can tell by the look in her eyes. She takes it, though, bringing the red cup to her mouth. Another follower. Surprise, surprise.
Hello, Earth to Harden.
Molly's voice cuts through the noise. I glance down at her, noting the annoyed expression on her face, while she rests her hand on her hip. Her eyes are on Tessa and Steph.
What were you staring at?
She asks, voice tight. Nothing. Mind your damn business. I continue on, up the stairs and toward my room. Behind me, I hear tacky and excessive jewelry clanging in the most annoying way. I turn back to Molly and her puppy dog eyes. Are you following me for a reason? She flips her pink hair from her shoulder.
I'm bored, she complains.
And? I pull my phone from my back pocket and pretend to be doing anything but listening to her. Molly runs her hand down my arm.
Entertain me, asshole.
I look her up and down, enjoying the way her tiny dress shows off all the things I've already seen. Her nails push into my skin, and her smile grows.
Come on, Harden. When was the last time you got off?
She has no shame. I like it. Well, considering you blew me 2 days ago. Her lips are on mine before I can get another word out. I pull back. She pushes forward. Ah, may as well. She's not half bad, and there are worse things I could be doing with my time. Like Steph hanging out with Goody Teresa all night. That would put anyone to sleep. Molly leads me to the farthest bedroom on the right. She already knows better than to try to go into my room. No one comes into my room. The door closes behind her, and she's on me within seconds. Her mouth is hot, her lips painted with sticky gloss. The act of touching, be it with Molly or someone else, gives me an escape. Doesn't make much sense to me, but when my mind is turned off for a while, it's easier. It's a rush, the only time I really feel much of anything. Molly leads me to the bed, an empty one without so much as a sheet on the damned thing. These small details don't make a difference when you don't feel any of it. Molly lays her small body on mine, grinding herself against my leg. I wrap her pink hair around my fist, pulling her mouth off of mine. No, I warn her. She groans, whining like she usually does when I remind her not to kiss me.
You're such an asshole,
she complains, but shifts to straddle my waist. The door clicks open, and she stops moving her hips. Turning around, she sits up, and I lean up on my elbows.
Can I help you?
Molly's tone is harsh with impatience and need. And of course, standing in the doorway is Tessa, Steph's roommate, with a look on her face that tells me she's more embarrassed than Molly and I put together.
Oh, no, sorry,
she stammers.
No, sorry, I was looking for a bathroom. Someone spilled a drink on me.
She frowns down at her soiled dress as if it was evidence. This girl spends a lot of time looking down, it seems.
Okay, so go find a bathroom.
Molly mocks with a flip of her hand.
Go find a bathroom.
Tessa leaves the room immediately and closes the door. Still, as Molly starts in on my neck, I can see the shadow of Tessa's feet under the doorway. Is she listening to us? How fucking weird. A few seconds later, she disappears, and Molly reaches her hand down between my legs.
God, that girl irritates me,
she complains. For someone who isn't very well liked herself, Molly sure has a lot of people who irritate her. Should I have asked her to join us? I shrug my shoulders, and Molly grimaces.
Ew, no way. Bianca or Steph, maybe, but that Tessa dud, no way. She's not even hot. And she's twice my size, nearly.
You're a bitch. You know that. I shake my head at her. Tessa, plain and all, has a nice body. The kind of body that men love. the kind of body that I would devour in a heartbeat if she could learn to tame that attitude of hers.
Whatever. It's just her tits that you like.
Molly's mouth latches onto my neck. I don't like her, I say, feeling the need to defend myself.
Well, obviously you don't like her.
Molly draws back to look at my eyes. She smiles like we're in on a secret together or something.
That doesn't mean you wouldn't fuck her.
A mouth catches my jaw, nipping at the skin there. Her hands grip me, one over my cock, and she continues to move her small body over mine. No more talking. I reach down between her parted thighs and run my fingers over her. She groans against my neck, and I focus on the pleasure she's providing me. Molly is more like me than she would ever admit. She too finds her days bleak and unexciting. She too uses sensation to escape her own head. I don't know much about her, really, and she'll never share, but I can tell it was rough. Molly's body shakes as I pump my fingers into her, knowing by now how to get her off quickly. Just as she moans, I catch the sound of Lou, but she quickly recovers and says my name. Lou? What the fuck? I try not to laugh at the thought of her talking about Logan, saying his nickname while I pleasure her. She knows better than to think he would give her the time of day. He's nice enough to her, simply because he's a nice guy, but the guy has standards. If I cared, I would call her out on it, but I simply don't give a fuck. I use her and she uses me. We both know this. My mind wanders to the party downstairs. I wonder how many times Steph's roommate has cried so far. She's quite the emotional one, with her ranting and sassy attitude that belies a frailty. Molly's hands tug at my jeans, unfastening the button, and I close my eyes as her warm lips wrap around my cock. Afterward, she doesn't say a word, and neither do I, when she wipes her fingers across her swollen lips. Molly stands, pulling her dress down to cover her body as much as the scrap can, and she leaves the room. I lie there, on a bed that isn't mine, and stare at the ceiling for a few minutes more, before wandering out into the hallway. The party is still going. The floors are getting messier and messier by the minute. A group of three drunk girls holding hands walks by.
You guys are my best friends,
the shortest of the three says. One of them is wearing a blue sweater, her eyes bloodshot as she stumbles down the hall, nearly tripping over her feet.
I love you both,
she replies, her eyes filling with tears. Drunk girls are there, crying and being best friends with everyone. Logan appears at the end of the hall, a crooked smile on his face and a drink in each hand. He offers me one, but I shake my head. Yours is water, he says, holding the red cup between us. I grab it, bringing it to my nose to smell the liquid. Thanks. I take a drink of the cold water and ignore the way Logan is silently judging me for drinking water. The house is packed, man, he says to me, clearing his throat with a grimace. This cheap vodka burns like a bitch. I don't say anything. I just let my eyes roam around the hall as we walk toward the stairs. Oh, hey, I saw that Tessa chick go into your room, he says from behind me. I turn to face him. What? She went in there with Steph. Steph's sick, puking in the bathroom. Why would they go into my room? I raise my voice. I could have sworn.